Good day, and welcome to today's iPRO Clinical Strategies to Improve Patient Outcomes Shared Learning Session conference call. This call is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Butterfield. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Leanna, and welcome. Good morning to everyone. This morning, we're going to revisit the oral medication management quality measure, and we're going to focus in on assessment and interventions targeting improvement for this quality measure. Just as a reminder to everyone, the oral medication management measure is our New York statewide quality measure that was selected to demonstrate improvement in the ACE scope of work. And we started work on this, just a trip down memory lane, in August of 2005, and our work will continue on this until the close of the ACE scope of work, which will be August 2008. The reason we felt it important to revisit this measure relates to the steady decline that we're seeing in the oral med statewide rate since January of 2007. As you know, that the rates that we share with you, they're based on a 12-month reporting period. And up until the 12-month reporting period ending January 2007, our New York State risk-adjusted rate was doing well. In comparison to the CMS baseline period, which was July 2004, at that time, at baseline, our New York State rate for oral meds was at 35.36. And by the reported period ending January 2007, we had improved a great deal to 38.10. So we went from 35 to 38, big jump in improvement. But over the last 3 months to the latest reporting period, which we just got this week, it's the 12-month period ending April 2007, we've seen a steady decline in the rate, and we're now down to 37.06. So we're going in the opposite direction of where we wanted to be. So we wanted to revisit this issue this morning. Some of this information we've covered before. What we've tried to do is to sort of structure it into a different format, focusing mostly on assessment and interventions. We know that many of the agencies, we have 153 agencies in New York that are working on the Home Health Quality Improvement Campaign. You're getting those monthly intervention packages, and in talking with many of you, you're focusing in on those packages, which is exactly what we want you to do, but perhaps the oral meds focus has fallen somewhat in the background. If you'll remember back, for those of you that are in the campaign, the March intervention package focused on oral medication management. So really our goal today is to highlight some of the areas we've discussed before. We've shared some new resource tools with you, and we want to provide a focus on the strategies that can be implemented or in some cases revived, if you will, within your agency to help improve this measure and the statewide measurement. As Leanna mentioned, as usual, the call is being recorded. It's going to be posted to our website. That's the iPRO website. You can find it within 5 to 7 days posted to the past events section of the home health section of the iPRO website. Also, if you registered for today's call, you should have received the email, the handouts, and the PowerPoint slides for this morning. If for some reason you did not receive those, you can go right to our website, the www.ipro.org, visit the home health section, and you'll find in the upcoming events section listed as the first bullet point today's presentation. It has a link that will bring you to the slides and the handouts for today's presentation. Let's move to slide number 3, and we'll just review some of the program objectives for this morning. We're going to review the components of the Management of Oral Medications Quality Measure and just re-review some of our progress to date for New York State. We're going to discuss the importance of accurate patient assessment and application of the interventions to improve oral medication management. We're also going to focus in and review some important considerations for agency organizational assessment for improvement oral medication management. And we're going to look at and identify some resources to support your agency's performance for improvement for oral medication management. As we move to slide number 4, I just want to sort of give a historical perspective of the oral medication management measure. When Home Health Compare was launched back in November of 2003, the national average for oral medication management was at 35%. And New York State exceeded the national average at that time period at 38%. Now, when you're looking at these numbers, remember on Home Health Compare, the national and New York State average are just averages. They're not risk adjusted, because some of you are probably going back to my previous comments saying, why don't those numbers match? But the Home Health Compare is not risk adjusted. The other data that I'll be talking to you about is. But in the last update to Home Health Compare that occurred in June, for the calendar year January through December 2006, the national average had increased up to 42%. That's a pretty big jump, 35 to 42%. And the New York State average also rose to 44% for Home Health Compare. Again, that's an average of all of the observed rates for our New York State agencies. You can see that as more agencies focus on this measure, both nationally and within New York State, the bar is continuing to raise for this comparison. And your monthly agency trend reports that we send you, you can also see the comparisons for the risk-adjusted rates. For example, the current reporting period that we just received, what you have on your slide is the April 2006 to March 2007 national rate. The national rate on the risk-adjusted reports was 42%, and again, New York State is down to 37%. And you can see, as we mentioned before, we were up as high as 38, and we've dropped somewhat. So again, the historical perspective and why we wanted to focus in on this. Just as a reminder, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services for the ACE scope of work really set an ambitious goal for us for this quality measure, not just for New York State, but for all home health agencies nationally. Their goal that they established was a 90% target goal for improvement of this quality measure. Now, slide number 5 is going to be hard to read if you didn't print the slides out in full view, but what it is it's the same as the second page of the iPro agency trend reports that we send to you every month. So it will look familiar to you. What it is it breaks down by agency type and upstate and downstate region how each of the different types of agencies are doing on this improvement in management of oral medications. I've highlighted the first line that you see, the time frame 7104. That's our baseline period. As you can see, if you look all the way over to the second from the last column on the right, we started out at 35.36. And as you can see down at the very bottom line, again in the second from the right column, in March we were down to 37.37. So we were doing well trending up, very progressively, and now we're starting to trend down. And you can take some time later on to just look at the individual agency types. Just to remind you, the CHA is the traditional home care agency that serves the traditional home care patient. Combined agencies serve both long-term care patients and traditional CHA patients. The long-term care agencies serve just solely a long-term care population. And the special needs agencies, there's 11 of those in New York State, serve traditionally just special needs patient populations. But it gives you the breakdown, and you can see the trending for each of those agency types. And for most of those provider settings or agency settings, you can see that there's somewhat of a decline in the last couple months for this measure. So our focus this morning is going to be on how we can improve our patients' ability to manage oral medications over the course of their home care episode. And we're going to focus in on two main topic areas related to medication management. So the first of those is going to be accurate assessment, OASIS assessment, and the second is going to be best practice clinical interventions that your clinical staff can utilize to identify activities and actions that might improve the ability of the patient to better manage their oral medications. And when I structured this presentation, I focused in on the strategies and interventions that will benefit both the traditional CHA patient as well as the long-term care patients. So we all have the same understanding of how and where this quality measure comes from. I want to first look at where the calculation of the publicly reported quality measure originates from. We still get questions with regards to this, so for some of you, this will be a review. And hopefully for others it will be a clarification of what these numbers mean. As with all of the quality measures on your reports, it starts with how you answer your OASIS question. And specifically for our purposes today, we're looking at MU item 780. On slide number 7, you'll see the format for assessment of the prior and current time period. It starts, of course, with the zero on the scale where the patient is able to independently take the correct oral medications and proper dosages at the correct times. Scale 1, able to take medications at the correct times if individual dosages are prepared in advance by another person, or the patient is given daily reminders, or someone develops a drug diary or chart. The next category is unable to take medication unless administered by someone else. And then we go down to not applicable in that the patient is not prescribed any oral medications, and unknown, which only applies to the prior category, does not apply to the current category. On slide number 8, you're going to notice the definition of MU 780 as defined in Chapter 8 of the OASIS Implementation Manual. And again, it's important to focus in on this so that all of the clinical staff within the organization understand what they are looking at to correctly assess this quality measure. It's the patient's ability to prepare and take all prescribed oral medications reliably and safely, including administration of the correct dose at the appropriate times and intervals. It excludes injectable and IV medications. And this particular OASIS question refers to ability, not the patient's compliance or willingness to take the medication. And if we can focus in on the taking of all prescribed oral medications reliably and safely for a moment, Chapter 8 of the OASIS Manual provides further guidance to look at what is true most of the time. So if the patient's ability to manage medications varies from medication to medication, consider the total number of medications and the total daily doses in determining what is true for that patient most of the time. Now, the CMS OASIS web-based training also provides guidance on this issue. The OASIS item refers to safely preparing and taking the correct medications and the correct doses at the correct time. It does not report the patient or caregiver's knowledge about the medication, so that is not something you're assessing for this measure. Preparation includes the ability to read the label, that it's the correct medication, the ability to open the container, to select the pill or the tablet or the liquid, meaning the correct dosage, and the ability to orally ingest at the prescribed time. Now, obviously, the knowledge of medications issue would naturally be addressed in your CAM planning related to appropriate teaching. But again, it's important that staff are assessing the correct factors for this measure to have it be accurate. And again, we're looking at accuracy at both start of care, resumption of care, and that end point of care. On slide 9, we see that only medications whose route of administration is PO should be considered for this item. It does include both prescribed and over-the-counter medications. And medications per G-tube or gastrostomy tube are not considered PO. They're considered to be administered per tube. Okay. So now we all have in our mind what it is we are assessing and what we should be looking at. I want to just spend some time on how this quality measure rate shows up on your reports and where the number comes from. We have agencies asking us where the data comes from. For instance, the IPRO agency trend report shows the agency they have a rate for oral meds at 45%. And the question that comes back to us is, where is IPRO coming up with that number? All of this data comes from the OASIS data that the staff within your agency are collecting at start of care, resumption of care, and at discharge and transfer. So it comes directly from how your staff are assessing patients and how they're answering those OASIS questions. So your staff collects the OASIS data. The agency enters the OASIS data into the CASPER system, or that's the system where you enter your OASIS data into. That data goes to a national repository. And your OBQI reports and your risk-adjusted rates come out of the data that you've submitted that goes to that national repository. So it comes directly from the direct caregivers who are assessing those patients and answering those questions. So the numbers are based upon what your staff are collecting on OASIS. The data is risk-adjusted for your patient population, and that data shows up on your reports. Okay, so again, the importance of stressing this assessment be accurate. Be able to understand the interpretation of the OASIS question so that it's being responded to accurately and also consistently, so that if a different nurse is assessing the patient at start of care to the end point, that if there's some improvement, they're both assessing correctly so that improvement is demonstrated in the answer that they're scoring on the OASIS tool. All of the patient's responses are aggregated across all patients and calculated into your agency report. These numbers are the same numbers that are used for Home Health Compare. So it's your OBQI reports, Home Health Compare. It's the same measurements that are going to be used for pay-for-performance. So they're all related together. Slide number 10 provides an explanation of how this oral medication management measure is calculated for your reports. Your agency reports and home health compare rate are based, again, on your OASIS data for all patients with a start of care, resumption of care, and discharge transferred during the specified 12-month time period. So just to put that in simpler terms, all of the reports are based on a 12-month time period. Currently, today, the most current reporting period we have available to us and you have available to you through your OBQI reports is the May 2006 April 2007 time period. For the oral medication management rate, that's calculated by all the patients within your agency that had a starting point, start of care, resumption of care, and an end point to care during that 12-month reporting period. So, the report contains all patients with a start of care and an end point to care being discharged or transferred. And we're talking here about care episodes, not payment episodes. So it's a patient that has a start of care and an end of care. That becomes your denominator, your patient population that the rate is based upon. The numerator for how it's calculated is all the patients that had a care episode within that 12-month period that had the potential to improve in oral medication management. Patients who are at a zero at start of care, they're already independent. They don't have the potential to improve. So those patients are excluded as they already are at the optimum level of function. So your numerator is all patients that had the potential to improve during that 12-month reporting period, all of those patients that had a start of care, resumption of care, and an end point of care during that 12-month reporting period. Okay. And hopefully that makes it a little easier to understand as far as how that rate is calculated. On slides 11 and 12, we're going to summarize the impact of accurate OASIS assessments, and we hope that you share this information with your staff, stressing the importance of accurate assessment, because a lot of times when we're doing staff presentation to agency staff, it's apparent that there's not really a connection of where they're, so they're assessing the patient for OASIS, but where does that information go and what impact does it have on the agency? It's really imperative for patient assessment and care management. As I just mentioned, your OBQI reports and home health compare data are based upon the agency self-reported OASIS data. The OASIS accuracy translates to each of the publicly reported quality measures, some of which are going to be incorporated in the CMS pay for performance for home health agencies. So if your oral medication management rates are not improving or you're looking at your agency trend reports and they're staying the same month to month, the first thing we recommend looking at is the assessment, staff assessment accuracy. You have the ability now on the Casper system to download your OBQI reports by branch. And this has been helpful for some of the agencies we've been working for. For instance, there's one agency that has three branches that I'm working with. When I download their reports and we looked at their reports together by branch, The rates were better for two of the branches. One of them did not seem to be doing well. And you know your patient population, your staff population within your agencies, within those branches. It could be simply that it's the patient population, perhaps poor compliance, education background. It could be patient-related. But the first thing you want to look at is really, are all staff consistently assessing the patients accurately for this measure? And the branch reports allow you to sort of see patterns across the different branches. If two are doing well, you may want to focus in on the one branch and sort of do some investigating. Is it the patients, or do you find that perhaps the staff need a little bit more education on how to accurately assess for this measure? On slide number 12, the accuracy of your OASIS assessment has a direct impact on care management, also on reimbursement for your agency, and the quality measure outcome data for your agency. So the accuracy of the OASIS, how the question is answered, impacts your care planning, care coordination, how you look on home health compare. It has a potential to impact on agency referrals, and it also has a potential impact for pay-for-performance, how your agency is going to rank for the pay-for-performance period. So it really is an important factor, actually, for all of the quality measures, but today we're going to just focus in on oral meds. So on slide 13, I've listed some questions for you to use to do a self-assessment of your agency. How does your agency fare in response to these questions regarding OASIS staff competency? What I'd like you to do is, as we review these questions and after today's call, think about, go back to them, and utilize them as possible opportunities to improve or strengthen, in this particular section, OASIS accuracy for your agency. Okay, some self-assessment questions. What does your agency do to ensure consistent and accurate OASIS data collection by both nurse and therapy staff? There are agencies that I talk with who are trying to improve this quality measure. In discussion, they've done education with the nursing staff, and then when you ask about the therapists who are also assessing for this measure, there hasn't been any education that's been done with them, or little education, or reinforcement of the education. So you want to make sure that that's with everyone that's answering this question within your agency. Does your agency have an OASIS competency requirement? And if yes, how often is the competency renewed? Is it just done when you're hired and you've been there now 10 years and there's been no reinforcement? When is it actually looked at? How is it looked at? How do you accurately ensure ongoing OASIS training for your current staff? How do you evaluate new staff coming through the door, their OASIS competency, once they're hired? What tools and resources does your agency provide for staff to assist in accurately completing OASIS in the field? Does your agency have incentives for staff to answer OASIS accurately and to maintain competency? You've heard on some of our other IPRO teleconferences, agencies present where they've actually tied employee performance evaluations into OASIS accuracy and case loads and outcomes of the patient. So there are some agencies that are trending to tie this into actual performance evaluation, making it very important to the staff. So again, some questions to think about and to go back to. And what we're going to do, starting with slide 14, is look at some strategies for success related to patient assessment that are provided in Chapter 8 of the OASIS manual. Okay, again, we're focusing on the OASIS accuracy. And as we've often heard and has often been said, OASIS is not just a patient interview tool. We really have to use combined observation and interview approach when working with the patient. So for this particular measure, we want to observe patients opening medication containers, ask them to show and tell how they open the containers, fill a planner, use reminders. Actually have them demonstrate that to you. Ask the patient to state the proper dosage for each medication and the correct times for administration. Remember, the question does not consider the patient's knowledge about the potential side effect. That's part of the comprehensive assessment, but not considered when responding to MOVE 780. So again, their ability to open, observe an interview, and their ability for the correct medication, proper dose, and correct times for administration. Continuing on 515, again looking at the combined observation interview approach, the cognitive and mental status of the patient and functional assessments really contribute to determine the appropriate response for this item. If the patient's ability to manage medications varies from medication to medication, again, you're going to consider the total number of medications, the total daily doses, and you're going to determine what is true most of the time. And for both of those resources on both slides, 14 and 15, what we've done is given you at the bottom of the slide the actual source where that comes from. So if you want to do some investigation or further clarification, you have the resources there to go right to get it right off of the website yourself or right from the manual. Okay, I'm moving on to slide 16. Again, we want to make sure that we're looking at patient ability versus preference. So let's look at the caregiver piece. Patient's caregiver may choose to organize a pill planner for the patient to make things easier for them. Okay, so you go in, the patient's using a pill planner. Important not to make that judgment call that it's necessary for them to have that pill planner. What you really want to look at is accurate assessment. Is the patient able to organize a pill planner? Are they able to tell you the correct dose, correct times, able to open the containers themselves? Is it just a matter of preference versus ability? You may have patients that you pre-fill medisets for. Have they been assessed for their ability to independently manage their meds? Have you asked them those questions or asked them to demonstrate their ability? If a medication simplification protocol was followed, meaning you've simplified their medication regimen, and their meds were decreased, for instance, to once a day or twice a day, could they manage them independently? It's really looking at the big picture and the patient's actual ability to take their medications reliably and safely. On slide 17, another common question we hear, the ability versus preference, their place of residence, for instance, the adult home. Their policy may be to provide medications to the patients as per their protocol. That's what they do. The patients, at a certain time each day, there's a process they follow to get their medications. But when you're in there accurately assessing the patient, it should be based on whether the patient is able to prepare and take their own prescribed oral meds reliably and safely. It may be the policy of the adult home, but again, this question is asking you, does the patient have the ability to do this? So you really have to be clear on what you're looking at, preference, place of residence, and other factors that impact the patient assessment piece. So on slide 18, we're going to look at some more questions for assessment of OASIS accuracy for your agency. Again, those self-assessment questions. Think about the answers here for your agencies, and again, are there opportunities to strengthen OASIS accuracy? Let's look at the questions. Are both observation and interview utilized for assessment of MU 780? I've had nurses tell me that in some instances, the start of care, resumption of care, endpoint of care, there may be copying of answers from the previous assessment. If I assess the patient one way at start of care, resumption of care, and you assess the patient differently at the end point of care, it's not going to be consistent. You may not pick up possible independence of the patient if not everybody is assessing the patient the same way. Very important that both observation and interview are being used consistently by all staff. And definitely there's no copying of the previous assessment. Do staff observe the patient performing preparatory activities? Are they watching the patient gather their med supplies? Is the patient able to access their meds where they're routinely stored? Are they trying to shuffle to the kitchen to try and reach on a stool above the refrigerator where they're keeping them so that the grandkids can't get at them? Are they stored somewhere accessible to the patient for them to be able to get at them easily? Are both prescribed and over-the-counter medications on the medication list? And is action taken when problems with oral medication management is identified? So, again, things to think about related to OASIS accuracy for an agency self-assessment. So if you look at those questions, and perhaps some of them jump out at you as possible opportunities to focus in on, I want to take a look at some of the possible tools and resources that you can use. Just in case some of these organizational assessment questions got you thinking, we could do this a little bit better. Some of these we've shared before, and some have been shared by other quality improvement organizations, and we wanted to have you be able to benefit from receiving them in case they're a good match for your agency. I'm going to start on slide 20. Again, if you didn't download these slides in the full size, it would be difficult to read, but this is actually one of the handouts for today's presentation. So you should be able to have a hard copy of this in full size. This is a staff interview for management of oral medications, and this came from one of the other quality improvement organizations in Tennessee, one of the newer tools. And what this is meant to be is an interview tool for you to use with your clinical staff, again, both nurses and therapists. You can choose to interview staff, all staff who complete the OASIS for your agency. If that's absolutely impossible, again, you can interview the greatest number you can, including members of all disciplines again. That is going to give you a better balanced view. Recommend you interview each staff member separately. You do not want anyone to be coaching them as far as what they should be answering. You want to be able to actually see what's happening with that potential, with that staff member. Tell the staff in advance that they're going to need to answer yes or no to these questions based on what they routinely do at home. It depends is not an acceptable answer. It's either yes or no. And what this is going to do, we provided these instructions, this tool, and actually a tally sheet for you to use. And what this is helpful for is to help you get a handle on if staff are accurately assessing patients. Are they following the appropriate interventions? You can also, I guess, choose to hand it out at a staff meeting and ask them to answer it. But again, encourage them not to discuss their answers amongst each other because you want to try and get as much of an accurate answer as far as if they're doing it correctly or not. You could also use this on a supervisory visit if you were doing observation of a nurse assessing the patient. So you could use it either way, but again, the goal of this tool is really to give you an idea of whether this assessment is being performed accurately. Okay, and again, you have the larger version of that tool. On slide 21, we have the medication assessment protocol, and we have shared this tool with you before, but for those of you that perhaps didn't look at it or thought about using it and then sort of put it by the side to look at later, this is a staff education tool that promotes standardized assessment of the patient's ability to, again, reliably and safely prepare and take all medications. So it's a one-page tool. It's helpful for staff. It can be used as an educational tool. It can be something that they actually use when they go out to do assessments. The clinical observation and assessment techniques may be employed by a therapist or a nurse. And it's an important reminder that clinicians must not only ask a patient how they take their medications, but also observe the patient performing their preparatory activities. So really a helpful tool, again, can be used as by a staff member or a self-assessment to see how they're actually assessing patients. Slide 22 has a snapshot of the guidance, OASIS guidance, that's posted to the Home Health Star website. For those of you that aren't familiar with Home Health Star, it's a website that CMS developed for home health agencies to go and set targets, goals, for each of the publicly reported quality measures. We have shared information on the Home Health Star website with you previously, and we're actually going to be sending out a reminder of how to access the site and your passwords to register to the site. But for each of the publicly reported measures on Home Health Star, there's a section where you can download a very comprehensive OASIS guidance, and this is from the CMS site, so it's the official CMS guidance. And what you see here is a snapshot of the first page of the oral medication guidance. So it gives you how the measure is calculated, what your denominator is, gives an understanding of how the measure is derived. It also gives some question and answer scenarios. So if you have a particular issue or something that's occurring within your agency with patients, you can look at the Q&A and see if they address your particular questions. You also have a resource. Each state has an OASIS education coordinator. We have one here in New York State, Maureen Duffy, at the Department of Health. And the OASIS education coordinator is tasked to also provide you with OASIS guidance and to be able to refer you to where in Chapter 8 you can find the appropriate guidance to answer your question. But this also is an excellent resource, the Home Health Star OASIS guidance. This document is probably, I want to say, about 8 pages long because of the questions and answers, but again, very comprehensive. And on slide 23, we have a tool that we had put together with the New York State OASIS Education Coordinator early back in the A scope of work. It's the Everything You Wanted to Know About Lou 780 But Were Afraid to Ask. And think of this as a shorter version of what is posted to Home Health Star. This is a, I believe, 2-page document that provides answers to some of the areas we covered in the previous slides about how to assess the patient for oral meds, some assessment strategies, and some assessment tips. Also contains some of those questions and answers. And this we've shared with you before, and this we have posted to our website. Again, a short, easy tool can be given to the staff, can be used as a part of a discussion points at one of your educational or team meetings within your agency. Slide 24, we're looking at a screenshot of the cover of the March Home Health Quality Improvement National Campaign Intervention Package. As I mentioned before, that month focused in on medication management. I referenced this for those of you involved in the campaign. I know many of you are using the Fast Track package because of the volume and the frequency that the intervention packages are coming out. I would encourage you to look at the full package for medication management because there are some excellent educational tools in there. Also, a clinician competency test that can be used for both nurses and therapists. Very easy to do, has a post-test, and the staff can actually get CEU credits for it. But again, has a variety of resources, an agency assessment, agency action plans, contains protocols and some implementation tools. And as you can see there on the slide at the top, I've given you the web link to the HHQI website. By now, most of you are familiar on how to get there, but just in case you haven't had the opportunity to get there, this is one of those packages that we would highly recommend you taking a look at in addition to the tools that they have posted there. And we're going to talk about some of those tools that relate to this package, and we get to the clinical intervention piece of today's presentation, which is where we are now. We've talked about the assessment piece, and we'd like to move on to the clinical intervention aspect of today's objectives. Again, we're addressing that question, how can we improve our patient's ability to manage oral meds over the course of the home care episode. We're going to discuss some of the best practices and the clinical interventions that your agency staff can utilize that might improve the patient's ability to manage oral medication activities. So we're switching gears here from assessment to actual clinical interventions that can be used when an issue or a problem related to medication management is identified. I first want to share some background that might be helpful to share with staff if you're trying to drive home the importance of why this measure is so important in relation to your mission for home care and your mission for your patients. I'm looking at slide 26, and we'll just look at some of the bullet points on this slide and slide 27, again, that you can share with your staff. Very eye-opening statistics. Nearly one-third of all patients aged 65 and older admitted to home care have evidence of a potential medication problem. Decline in medication management is the second most frequently occurring adverse event. Almost 30% of hospital admissions for people 65 or older are directly attributed to medication non-adherence. 30 to 50% of hospital admissions are believed to be due to drug-related problems or adverse events. So if you think particularly with those, if you're trying to improve oral medication management and you're also trying to bring down your emergent care and acute care hospitalization rates, and 30 to 50% of hospital admissions are due to drug-related problems or adverse events, you can definitely see the relationship between this measure and acute care hospitalization. We're moving on to slide 27. Approximately 40% of people are admitted to nursing homes because they're unable to safely manage their medications at home. The fifth leading cause of death for older adults, 7,000 deaths per year are due to adverse drug events. And the real eye-opener of 20% of the Medicare population has five or more chronic conditions. They see 14 different physicians a year, fill 50 prescriptions annually, and account for two-thirds of the total Medicare spending. When we had done for CMS a quick chart review, some of the agencies in New York had done this as far as patients that were hospitalized. One of the things they asked for were the number of medications patients were on when they were hospitalized. And this was done sort of randomly across all the states, and the average number of medications for a home care patient was 13. So obviously a very important measure. It addresses patient safety as well as the independence of the patient to remain within their own home. So we're going to discuss some of the best practice interventions that your clinical staff can utilize to address medication management issues. And we're going to do that starting with slide 28. There are a number of issues that impact a patient's ability to safely and reliably take their medications as prescribed. The first, probably the most common, we'll start with patient compliance. Assessing the compliance and barriers to compliance. Is the barrier really noncompliance, or does it relate to the patient's understanding of the medication purpose? Are they likely to take a new medication if it's something that they don't understand? I have an example to share with my mother. Every time I go to her to a physician for a particular problem, she does not like to take medication. She doesn't like to change her medication regimen. So as we sit in the doctor's office and they say, we'd like to put you on such and so medication, she smiles, she takes the prescription, and I know in my heart and ask her the question, once we get in the car, are you actually going to take this? If older adults will take medications when they understand why they are on them, and they trust the recommendation of the clinical team. You have the unique opportunity with the rapport that you have established with the patient to talk about that and to reinforce those medications and why they're on them. The home health aides that are in there taking care of the patients, they also have that rapport with the patient. So if there's a particular issue related to compliance, elicit their support to work with the patient. And the community pharmacist. There was a report a few years back about one of the most trusted healthcare disciplines that older adults see is that a pharmacist. They see them as well trusted. They believe what the pharmacist tells them and look to them for support. So if they understand why they're on the medication, more likely they are to take it. Also assessing cognitive function and the support systems that are in the home. Do they have the money for the meds? Are there family issues that are impacting their compliance? Patients with good support systems tend to take their medications correctly. Also assess nutrition and their GI function and ability to tolerate medications. Again, the example is my mother. She has sciatica. They put her on Celebrex, and sure enough, she had GI function problems immediately on the drug. So it could be they're not taking the drug or the medication simply because it's causing them a problem, whether it be GI or nausea or vomiting or just an adverse reaction to the medication. So, again, important to drill down if there's a compliance issue, why that's occurring. Another big issue, polypharmacy, and we're on slide 29. The previous slide we looked at where it said 20% of the Medicare population had five or more chronic conditions, 14 different physicians, 50 prescriptions annually. That does not include sometimes that shoebox of medications that saved in the closet over the last few years, just in case they may need those meds again. Some of those are duplicate meds. Some of those are adverse event medications related to medications they're currently on. Older adults often take medications that may increase the risk of adverse drug reactions and then therefore increase the risk of hospitalizations. And some of those drugs may be over-the-counter. Medications that you wouldn't think would cause an adverse reaction, but do. The number of medication often influences this patient's caregiver's ability to manage those medications accurately and independently. If you think about taking 13 different medications per day, has to be overwhelming to be able to keep track of what they are, when to take them, and how to take them. Multiple medications that cause sedation or sleepiness can interact to produce mental status decline. That can lead, obviously, to patient falls, to injuries, visit to the emergency room, requirement for acute care hospitalization. Also, the adverse effects on the patient's ability to manage themselves at home or to even just simply manage their medications at home can have a definite impact on the patient's mental status and ability to be independent. So one of the most important clinical interventions when you're talking about polypharmacy is medication reconciliation. Again, at start of care, resumption of care, recommend re-review every visit, especially if they've had an emergent care or an acute care hospitalization visit, and also following an MD office visit where there's the potential for the physician to readjust or add additional medications. When you are reconciling medications during these times, identify patients at risk for drug reactions. And you see two ideal situations there, which are pretty much for both apply to home care patient population: the multiple diagnosis and also multiple health care providers. Again, they have many providers, different specialty physicians they're seeing, and each are prescribing medication, perhaps not looking at the big picture of all the medications that they're on. But also physician offices are doing a thorough medication list when patients go in, the majority of them, to see what particular medications patients are on. As I mentioned earlier, the simpler the medication regimen, the more likely the potential the patient's going to be able to manage their medications more safely, and the more likely you're going to avoid adverse drug reaction. We're going to look at a tool that will help you with medication simplification in just a few minutes. So on slide 31, we have some of those questions again, this time related to clinical intervention. Again, these questions are offered as a self-assessment of your agency. Is medication reconciliation part of your assessment? It's a pretty safe bet that it is. Again, does it include all medications and when it is performed? And are both nurses and therapists looking at that particular issue? Do we assess adherence to prescribed medications? Do we identify reasons for non-adherence? Are appropriate referrals made to other disciplines to address those? And we have a tool coming up shortly that can support this process for you. Is the pharmacy the patient uses identified? Do we coordinate with the pharmacy so that medication packaging and compliance aid are compatible? Are we recommending if the patient has difficulty opening those patient safety tops? Are there easy open tops? Are there compliance aids that we can help the patient have to support their independence? For therapy-only cases, do therapists evaluate medication adherence on an ongoing basis? And is there a request for the RN to come in and intervene and if adherence problems are identified? Do we use a medication simplification protocol for patients on more than 8 medications? And as I mentioned, we're going to look at a real simple tool for you to use to look at that particular process. So you've reviewed the organizational self-assessment questions. There may be one or more that stand out as possibilities to investigate or strengthen in your agency. So we're going to look at, starting on slide 33, some of the available tools that can support those interventions so you're not having to start from ground zero or scratch in developing appropriate tools. What you see on slide 33 is a screenshot of the best practice tools that we sent out to the New York State agencies back in the fall of 2005. We had sent you an oral medication management planning packet. This particular resource is posted to our website. Again, it's the IPRO website. If you go to Home Health and you select the resources, you'll see this oral medication management tools and resources as one of the options. And this package of tools is posted there for you. You see the URL or the link to be able to access that on the slide. It contains many of the same tools that were included in the March Home Health Quality Improvement Campaign Intervention Package. Again, those assessment protocols, teaching tools, the non-adherence guide, medication reconciliation, medication simplification, And also contain some additional tools. But again, a good resource. You can customize them for your agency. I want to just take a look and review some of these tools that are mentioned or included in that package. And on slide 34, you have a screenshot of the medication non-adherence tools. And that tool is focused to promote better understanding of medication issues, to trigger appropriate referrals to promote improvement. It addresses many of the factors that might be considered when assessing medication adherence. And it lists potential non-adherence issues in the left column and strategies for assessment in the middle. And in the right-hand column, it gives a referral trigger. So if it's a medication related to, for instance, not able to pay for their medications or a social issue in the home, it could be trigger a referral to the RN or the medical social worker. So it's especially a good tool. It can be used for both clinicians, RNs, and therapists. And it indicates when it's appropriate to make a referral to nursing for medication issues. And this tool you can download from the HHQI campaign website. That website URL was included on a previous slide. It's also included in that packet I just talked about that's posted to our website. The tools on slide 35 are also posted on the Home Health Quality Campaign website. The URL is at the top of this slide for you. The need for all home health care or for health care settings to work collaboratively is really crucial for medication safety, and what we find is everybody's using a different tool to look at medication discrepancies or even just to list medications. So the focus for this tool is on medication reconciliation across all settings. And what you have here is a screenshot of the universal medication form that the Institute for Healthcare Improvement developed, and also a screenshot of the medication discrepancies tool from Dr. Eric Coleman's Care Transitions Program, and that's to promote better medication coordination. And the intention is that you'll increase awareness of this issue and promote discussion about what your organization can do to promote safe transition across provider settings. Slide 36 shows a snapshot of that medication simplification protocol. We were just talking about this. If the patient's taking more than 8 medications, is there an opportunity to simplify the drug regimen? The goal here is to use the fewest medications in the simplest form. And, again, the potential is to improve adherence and independence of the patients. And with this, the home health agency can work with a community-based pharmacist and also the physician to reach those goals. And there's 7 steps that are listed here for you, from removing unnecessary or expired drugs to prevent confusion, to substituting or discontinuing cautionary medications known to be problematic for geriatric patients. And we're going to talk about Beer's criteria in just a moment. Slide 36 has the protocol for medication simplification, and continued on slide 37 is a snapshot of the steps to medication simplification and also the disciplines involved in each of those steps. And again, this is posted to the Home Health Quality Improvement National Campaign website for you to download. Again, an excellent educational tool, focuses in on trying to get meds to the most simplest form, easiest form for the patient to utilize. Slide 38 contains a shot of what's called the Beer's criteria, and this is something that we've shared with you in the past. It's part of that toolkit that we sent to you in the fall of 2005. This particular resource tool lists for you medications that are potentially inappropriate for use in older adults. The medication you can see is listed in that first column. The second column provides a detailed explanation of what the concern is with that drug. What does it cause? What is the potential side effects or adverse events that could occur related to that particular drug? And then in the third column, it has a severity rating of high, medium, or low. And this is updated on at least a yearly basis, and the updated version is posted to the Home Health Quality Improvement Campaign website. So again, if you're looking at simplifications or just looking at appropriate use of drugs for your patients, or there's a patient that's having a particular problem with falls or confusion, this can be an excellent resource tool to take a look at the medications they're on compared to this, to see if there's a particular concern or inappropriate use to communicate to the pharmacist and the physician for that particular patient. And finally, on slide 39, we have a screenshot of one of today's handouts, which is the personal health record. This is a tool, again, that comes from Dr. Eric Coleman, who focuses in on importance of care, improving care transitions. This potential personal health record can be printed off, and it's formatted so that you could provide it in booklet format to the patient. We provided it to you in Word because we added to this on the first page, I am receiving home care services from, so that this is potentially something the patient could bring with them to the emergency room or to the hospital or to the physician's office and keep it up to date. Obviously, it would need to involve both the patient and caregiver if appropriate. It provides, when you look at the actual tool, if you've rented off, the personal health information of the patient, physicians, their hospitalization information, their medical history. It gives them some goals to better manage their health and medications. And it also, the largest page, which is the middle part of the booklet, provides for them to document their medications, the medication dose frequency reason and when they started taking that, as well as a list of their allergies and their immunizations. And they can even jot down on that page any particular notes or concerns they want to discuss with their physician. So there's both pros and cons with using this type of thing. We've seen some people try to get this down to a wallet size format, which is virtually impossible. The con is the patient going to take it with them? But again, it helps empower the patient to keep better track of what they're on, for the caregiver to have better track. They could even keep this in their pocket or pocketbook in case they have to go to the physician's office or bring it to them with the physician's office so they have an accurate list of the medications that they're on. And again, this is one of your handouts for today's presentation. So slide 40 is really summarizing what we've discussed this morning, strategies for success in improving oral medication management. We looked at improving OASIS assessment and staff competency for OASIS, and also utilization of clinical intervention tools to assess non-compliance, non-adherence, reconciliation, polypharmacy, those issues that really might be driving non-compliance or medication management issues for the patient. And you really can make a difference for your patients in their improved ability to self-manage medication administration, also the decreased risk of adverse drug events and potential hospitalization. You're helping keep the patient in their home where they want to be. Certainly, our home health project team is here to support your efforts. If any of these tools seems like something you'd like to use but you want more information or want more information on how to use them or apply them in your agency, please feel free to call one of us, and we will be more than more happy to talk about it in more detail with you and to discuss it. On slide 42, I've listed for you the oral medication management sessions, recorded sessions, teleconference presentations that we've done to date. They are posted to that link that I provided you on the IPRO website. And also on slide 43, I gave you some website resources. I listed the OASIS training website as the second one there because we found that some agencies weren't aware that there was a web-based OASIS training program. So I included that into the website resources. And also you'll see the Home Health Star website listed as the last one there. Again, if you have any questions, on the very last slide of today's presentation, you have the contact information for myself, for Vicki, and for Chris. And with that, Leanna, I'd like to open the line up for any questions or comments.
Certainly. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, you may do so by pressing the star key, followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that is star 1 if you have a question, and we'll pause for just a moment.
And one other thing is Leanna's pausing to look for any questions. One of the other handouts that we provided to you was a one-page therapist guide to recognizing medication problems in therapy-only patients. And again, it's just an educational tool, common side effects, common problems, and some basic solution for calling reinforcements to address the situation. So again, offered to you as an educational tool for the accurate assessment piece. Leanna, any questions?
We have no questions at this time.
Okay, great. Again, if there's anything the three of us can do to support your efforts, I know you have a lot that you're working on. I hope that some of today's discussion sort of highlighted some areas for oral medication management. We want to be able to show some improvement in your agency level rates and also for the statewide rates. So anything we can just do to support your efforts, please feel free to contact us. And again, thanks for joining us this morning for today's presentation.
That does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation and have a great day.